We had another gathering this past weekend in Ottawa, this time from Wednesday to Sunday. It was again open to our families. And it was an amazing experience because we got to see so many community members that now are considered family. We also got to visit the Legacy of Hope display, which is a new display about the 60 Scoop experience. It's going to be traveling around Canada. Hopefully we will get it in Toronto. But it was amazing to walk into the room and see the displays that had photos and people's stories, and to watch those people connect with each other and to watch the reactions. Because I think no matter how different our stories are, there's such a shared pain and grief between all of us. But what was amazing was that we got to go and visit this display in community where we could support one another and with our families. This is my two daughters and our grandson. And I think it's really hard for the kids in our communities because when they go to these gatherings, they hear our stories. And our stories aren't always nice. Sometimes we talk about not feeling like we belong or having a connection to culture, but often we talk about abuse, sexual, physical, emotional, things that happened after, how many of us ended up on the streets or in psychiatric institutions or in prison. But our children need to hear these stories because it's a part of their history. When I first talked to an elder and I was receiving my name and my colors and my clan, he said, "Where are you from?" And I said, "I'm not really sure." And he said, "That's enough. Stop." He said, "How long do you want this to go on for? Do you want your kids to always have to say, 'I don't know, I'm not sure'? Or do you want them to be proud of their history, proud of where they come from, proud of the struggles that your family's gone through, and to be able to pass their culture on to the next generation and the generation after that?" He looked at me and he said, "It's up to you to break the cycle." This was at a time in my life where I just wanted to run from the culture. It felt like every interaction I had in the community was painful. I ended up living on a reserve for 8 months as a student, which was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do because I got to witness what happens when you live in a community connected to the land with a huge extended family, with elders who know their teachings, with people who participate in either church communities with long histories or, in this case, the Madewin Lodge with long histories. And I always felt like an outsider. What's beautiful about being able to bring 60 Scoop survivors and adoptees and those who grew up in foster care together is that we have formed community. I know for myself as a Two-Spirit person, we've always had teachings on chosen families because so many of us lost our families when we came out. And it's one of those teachings that I've carried into my Indigenous communities, that if we can't find our communities, then we have to create them. And here in Toronto, we're so lucky because there's so much access to cultural stuff. We have elders from so many different nations and healers and people willing to hear our histories and to share. And so at these gatherings, part of what we do is enter into ceremony. We had a Two-Spirit sweat, a men's sweat, a women's sweat, another men's sweat, another women's sweat, and an open sweat. And two children's sweats. We had a sacred fire burning the entire time. We had elders come and speak to us and take care of us, not necessarily adoptees themselves, but who had experienced the traumas of residential school. And it was one of the elders that spoke to us that said something that really drove home something for me. Because I've always heard so many stories about residential schools and thought, and this is just my feeling, but thought, well, for adoptees, like, we didn't have it quite as bad. But he stood up there and he said, "I hear your trauma, I hear your stories, and I recognize some of your pain as the pain in my own story, because I went to residential school, I was separated." But he said, "But what's different is that in the school, even though I was separated from my brothers and sisters, even though I wasn't allowed to speak my language, I still had a community. We had a community of Indigenous children, and we lived together, and we experienced things together, and we healed together. With adoptees, you were sent all over the world, and you were alone and isolated and had no connections to your culture. And I can't imagine how lonely that must be. And I'm so grateful to the elders and the people in our community who are willing to open up their hearts, their homes, their lands, their sacred spaces, and take us in. And one of the most magical parts of this gathering for me was having baby Elias with us. We kept joking that we had brought 16 pounds of medicine and talked about how he truly is a community baby and he loves to be passed around. And he did get passed around for the most part, except that Frank DeLorme, who is in this picture, this is probably the only time he wasn't holding Elias. He would just walk around and sing to him and drum, which is so important. One of the teachers at our gathering said that whenever there's a baby, even if it's about to be apprehended, we have to drum and sing to it because it will always remember that, and that will always be the light that guides it home. So Frank walked around with Elias, and this was on the last day as he was crying and saying thank you to Elias for all that Elias did for him. And today when I spoke to Frank, he said that I could share his story. So this is just a brief paragraph that he sent me on Facebook. He says, I'm a single father of three young sons, Ben, Jared, and Robert, and the daughter, Tori. I'm a proud grandfather of Lewis and Logan, who have empowered me to move forward, to learn, love, and laugh, which hasn't been the norm. My children, when they came to me, had no idea they were being raised by a first-time father who could barely change a diaper, but I learned, I adapted, and we survived. I gave my children my word that I would love them, I would not walk away on them, and I would not allow them to be interfered with. I would stay. I was apprehended at 18 months and went through a succession of foster homes until I left that system at an early age and wandered a few years until joining the Canadian Armed Forces at the age of 17 and stayed for 6 years. Once I left that system, I got to attend another system, provincial jail. After a few years of that, I attended the University of Regina through the Saskatchewan Urban Native Teachers Education Program. And despite not completing the degree program, that's when I began learning about my First Nations history. I then began looking for my relations and found my reserve, Cowessess in Saskatchewan. The years went by and I eventually found my birth mom in Vancouver and we spent time together before she passed away a few years ago. My children and now my culture have saved my life, and this past week I met another child who helped me through a very hard time, Elias. Holding him, singing to him, listening to him, the peace he brought me enabled me to be more present than previously. I thank his mom and his grandmothers for allowing me to monopolize his time, and will always cherish that gathering because he was there. And I think what I learned this weekend was the importance of children and the healing that they bring and how special they are in our circle of life and all the stages that are in it. And what was amazing was to have Elias there in a space where it was safe to talk about his almost apprehension and where people recognized the miracle it was that we had that baby in that circle. And so we asked Laureen Blue Waters, an elder that we work with often, a Two-Spirit elder from Toronto, if she would pray to the Creator and get the traditional Anishinaabe names for Dea and for Elias, because they're the children that don't have their names yet. And so she gave them their names, and she gave them their names in front of the entire community of us gathered. And Elias's name is He Who Runs Ahead Through the Trees, because he ran ahead of CAS, averted apprehension, but also runs through the trees, clearing the path so that other children also won't be apprehended and will stay with their communities. And Dea's name is She Who Sits with the Stones and the Rocks, because she held fast, she was strong, she was grounded, and she helped stop another child from being apprehended. At the end of the gathering, the elder who was working with us over the weekend did a blanket ceremony. Blanket ceremonies were originally done with buffalo robes, but as the robes became more difficult to get, as the buffalo supply dwindled, they switched to blankets. And the blanket has always been used to mark a number of life transitions. The receiving blanket when we're babies, the blanket that we get at our weddings, at graduation, at our funerals. And there's also the coming home blanket. Now, Leroy Bennett, who was the elder, made sure that we knew that even though most of us had never received the blankets in our lives up until that point that we should have received, it didn't matter. It didn't make us less than. It just meant that now was our opportunity to pick up our blankets and move ahead. And in our culture, we give blankets to those that we honor and respect. They're wrapped around us as a form of protection to keep us safe. But it's also symbolic of the entire community wrapping itself around someone to support them. And so we were wrapped in blankets as part of a coming home ceremony, so emotional that people were doubled over, some almost throwing up, because it was the first time that many of us had felt like we were really welcomed into a community. And so in our families, we enact resistance. We enact resistance through reconnecting with our culture, by speaking out in our faith traditions, by keeping our babies safe and with us as much as we can. We have the 60 Soup class action lawsuit here in Ontario right now. So in February, the judge ruled that damages had been done and that the government needed to be held responsible. And I know there's a lot of misinformation this week going around about the status of the case. The hearings have been held over from next week because they're trying to do arbitration. So just to clarify some of those points, I just wanted to read the message that's from the lawyers involved in the case. So right now, confidential discussions are taking place to attempt a Canada-wide settlement of the 60 scoop. So the court date that we had next week was for Ontario. They've decided to try to settle nationally. Chief Marcia Martel Brown believes these discussions may result in a resolution aligned with her vision and the hopes of many survivors she has consulted within her community. She believes there is the strong potential through these discussions for achieving justice for all those who experienced harm. As a result, she has instructed her counsel to participate in these discussions with lawyers from different parts of Canada and Justice Michael Shore. In light of these discussions, Marcia has directed an adjournment of the October 11th compensation hearing in Toronto. The most important thing to understand is that even if there is no settlement, the court will determine compensation payable to survivors. If at any time Marcia believes progress on settlement discussions is not being made in a satisfactory way, then compensation hearing before Justice Balboa will immediately be rescheduled. So that's the hearing that we were supposed to have in Toronto next week. The discussions, like all settlement discussions, are confidential. Marcia and her counsel, along with other clients and their counsel from other parts of Canada, are the only people party to the discussion with the federal government mediated by Justice Shore. What we can say is that Marcia would not be at the table if key elements of her vision were not part of the discussion. While we don't have a timeline we can share right now, we can say that Marcia, like all of us, is committed to a reasonably swift resolution. We want to take the time to get it right, but as you all know, this case has dragged on for close to a decade, and seeing it resolved in a timely manner is what everyone wants. So this is one of the ways that we heal. Another way is there's a call out from a group, part of OPSU, for a national inquiry into the 60s scoop, the same as was held for the TRC hearings. Likely mentioned, I'm the keeper of the circle for Damish Kozyman, which means we are strong. It's a healing circle that's held at Council Fire the third Wednesday of every month. All survivors and their families are welcome. I'm grateful to Michael Chena, who's our elder at that circle. But I think what's most important is that we remember that for all survivors, we need a place to call home. We need our homes to be open. And we need to recognize that we already are home. We're connected to the land. We're connected to the Creator. And there's a community out there willing to wrap their blankets around us and bring us back into the circle.